Recording from just south of Hollywood Road, where the bandits will never find us, it's Dystopian Present. I'm your host, Ross, and I'm joined by my co-hosts...
Previous Night.
And...
Alice.
And we are here to bring you the all-kidnapping, all-Avengers edition. We've had to move from the 27th tallest building in the world for reasons of exorbitant rent and are now safely ensconced within that part of Hong Kong known as Soho, which for us means south of Hollywood Road, which made me recall that I actually don't know what it means anywhere else.
It's rife with false etymologies.
Here in Hong Kong or all Sohos?
Pretty much all of them. The Ur Soho is the Soho in London, which is generally accounted, and this is, everybody knows this is false, but one of, you know, what they'll tell you on the kind of big top bus tour,
right,
is that it's because the area was part of Henry VIII's hunting ranges.
Soho, was that
yes,
their hunting cry?
And this begat Soho in New York, which is south of Houston, which gave us the retronym NoHo, north of Houston.
Right. Which NoHo here too, just on the other side.
Yeah, they don't call it that. The Soho here is probably just named after the Soho in London rather than, otherwise it would be Soha or something like that.
Well, actually, we are...
And then NoHo
so
in L.A.
Well, no,
North Hollywood.
We are
on Hollywood Road, and actually, we actually are in NoHo. We are north of, technically, North Hollywood Road right now.
We NoHo.
We are, yes.
And so Soho is
that way
for those of you in radio land who
need to know.
Ross is currently pointing in a direction.
And that is south. Right, so let's start off with Hong Kongery. It's been a slow political week, so we thought we'd return to an old Hong Kong classic. Or rather, I like to think of it as an old Hong Kong classic because I've been here a while and I've been through the great golden era of celebrity kidnappings. We had a new edition. To quickly sort of go through the backstory, Hong Kong... fairly densely populated with zillionaire tycoons, multi-generational families, insanely wealthy, with...
So easy to lose a younger member.
Yes, so easy.
So hard to
they fall through the cracks.
Super safe town with super high tolerance for extravagant behavior and nearly sort of just full-on encouragement of princelings to just... you know, walk through the streets drenched in diamonds and cockatoo feathers and lavender Bentleys. And so they're easy to find, these rich scions. They don't take much care because it is a safe town. So your average intrepid mainland bandit comes and kidnaps one. And this used to happen a lot. And it hasn't happened for 15 years, but we just had... our latest celebrity kidnapping.
Well, I thought these actually were very cyclical. Much like the cicadas hatching.
Yep,
bandits
okay.
hatch and come in, and then a new generation of bandits has been raised and
right.
prepared.
So we are now at the cusp of... Yes, we are at the cusp of the new banditry season.
We might be able to kind of tie this to a larger economic cycle.
We might.
But I also have the feeling that we can also tie it to the kind of... the period of mass historical amnesia following the handover. So
right.
this has
reach for the stars, Alice.
Well, what the headlines in the South China Morning Post were all about how, you know, this was, you know, Hong Kong was famous for these kidnappings.
Right.
And something that happened a lot 15 years ago anywhere else
Is history
is not really usually considered a kind of continuous social process.
Well,
but officially nothing has happened since 1997. We could just go straight.
It's all fresh.
Oh, but I think if you dug back, you will find that there are
In terms of kidnapping?
Pre-handover kidnappings. And so to just to ground this before we go on, there is...
Oh, there certainly are. Yes. Right. I mean, there's no doubting that, but...
But just before we move on and discuss whether or not this is a worthy addition to the canon or not, a couple of weeks ago, the daughter Eris, and I think, you know, Eris got pulled, I don't think she was known by any other term other than Eris, to the Bossini fortune. And for those of you at home wondering why an Italian heiress was caught in Hong Kong,
who don't speak Italian,
this is one of several clothing dynasties that were founded some decades back when the fastest road to riches was to cook up a plausible Italian name and set up a kind of a Gap / Benetton.
All of these things are kind of sub-Gap, sub-Benetton from before when Hong Kong had such outlets.
Right.
And there were a number of kind of local firms that flew into this with Giordano Bossini.
Right.
Great made-up Italian words.
So the heir... What was her name? Did she have a great name? I forget.
Queenie?
Queenie. There we go. Queenie.
She doesn't sound privileged at all.
No. It probably, given the propensity of the insanely wealthy to have vanity plates, she probably gave the kidnappers one extra leg up in that she was cruising around in an extravagant vehicle, which was eponymously called
Queenie One.
Queenie One, or yeah, but she was taken by six mainlanders and held, and this is the great sort of, you know, 1001 Nights turn of it. She was taken to a cave in Kowloon and held there.
Well, this was once the land of pirate caves.
Exactly.
And was this one of the kind of, you know, Japanese occupation resistance caves? Or was there
I do this, not know. I'm sure there will be.
Predate, because there were quite a lot of bandit caves.
Right. So, they dusted off their bandit handbook, you know, after they sprang from the earth, renewed as this generation.
Well, it has been 15 years. There's been no updates.
Yes, exactly. No bandit caves have been used.
This is the only place, by the way, where, you know, whatever this is in both Cantonese and Putonghua, where you would translate this kind of criminal as bandit.
Mm.
And I think it's great.
I love
reaching
into
language history and
extortionist.
Well, see, this is my biggest problem with this generation, kidnappers today. I tell you,
yeah,
they back in the day, back in my day, Alice. I tell you, kidnappers, bandits, rogues, brigands, all of them used to have fabulous names. You used to have guys like...
Now we only get that in the election.
I know. we used to have Big Spender. Now, Big Spender, actually, he was also, you know, Big Bald Spender, because he went and he kidnapped the number one son of Li Ka-shing, Hong Kong's richest man. And
now, that's doing it in style.
Yes. So he didn't even, like, settle for the number two son. He went for the top guy, got paid... Yeah, but then absconded to Guangdong, where Li Ka-shing pulled a few strings and got him arrested. And of course, in the mainland, there's capital punishment, and the family gets charged for the bullet.
And given that, you know, Li Ka-shing is generally thought to be able to control things like the weather, maybe not the best person to cross.
Right. And then there was also Broken Tooth Jung, who he was another great. Greatly named bandit. But these guys didn't have...
What kind of dental work did he have?
But these guys...
That's the irony. He had perfect teeth. The only perfect teeth in Guangdong in the 1980s.
But nobody groovily named Kidnapped Queenie. It was all like... Zheng Zhaoping. I forget. His surname was Zheng. I forgot what his name... But no. No grand nicknames. No, like, you know, three-toed...
Basically, the Chinese versions of Brett, Kent,
Yeah. Like, possibly more like Dwayne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Dwayne squad kidnapped Queenie, stuck her in a cave for 3 days, asked for 40 million Hong Kong dollars, which is about 5-ish million U.S., give or take.
$5 million.
$5 million, they said, with Dr. Evil aplomb. And then got knocked down to 20. This is the other great thing about tycoons. They bargained down. Yeah, I don't know if I can do 40 for Queenie.
But these guys bargained down too quick.
Yeah. So, but they settled on 28, so about 3-ish million. Got down to 3-ish. Paid.
How many bedroom apartment would that get you?
Like half two? Of one. Not even.
Two halves. There's...
Two one-bedrooms in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't even get you, like, 1,500 square feet of crappy...
wouldn't get you Queenie's maid's room.
No. Queenie couldn't live off that. Queenie probably had that on her somewhere. Anyways, so they got down to 28, paid, and then what happened? Within 72 hours, they were all abducted. Six of them were abducted in the mainland, so...
No,
they did.
Five in the mainland.
I'm sorry, five
one
in the mainland.
In Hong Kong.
Right. So everyone was like...
apprehended or abducted.
And
I'm sorry.
Apprehended,
well,
it's the law, so actually...
I'm saying abducted, because like I said, these tycoons will drop a dime on you in a minute. They will call somebody they know at Guangdong Police Department headquarters.
Not otherwise always known for its efficiency.
Right. So, again, why the sixth guy was trying to cross into Shenzhen, if I'd be thanking my lucky stars I got pinched in Hong Kong, because it means I'm not getting a bullet to the head.
Maybe he learned how much property would cost here.
Right. That's true. This isn't going to get me anywhere.
I got to go back to my world nation.
So, yeah, exactly.
Sorry,
so six
world.
Of them. So they're dealing with 6 million Hong Kong a piece in change, which in RMB terms is less than 5 million. So they're... they netted
after taxes.
They weren't going to. They couldn't
taxes on ransom.
Well,
in Guangdong province,
you have a good accountant, of course.
So what you're saying here is that they, if you're going to kidnap,
right?
If you're going to kidnap a
don't try this at home
heiress, you really should ask for a lot more, and B, stick to your guns.
Mm. And don't try to go to the mainland, ever. Even if, like, you think you're safe, just stay here. If you think, live it up, spend, like, that was, again, Big Spender's big thing was he would kidnap and he would immediately go out and blow it. So he was a very sort of existential kidnapper, living in the moment, just, like, immediately burning $1,000 bills.
I wonder why the film industry has taken this nosedive. It's because the source material is just not being produced.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, a meager and unsatisfying addition to the great Hong Kong heiress or Sion kidnapping legacy. Poor choices of names, poor bargaining skills. Nice cave work.
You really
compliment them on their cave work.
You really can't fault them for caving into a low amount the way they did. With a name like Queenie, she was a handful. You've got
to
get
sure.
that quick.
Yeah.
There's your source material for a movie.
Plucky heiress.
Obnoxious
throws
heiress.
Pomeranian at kidnappers in cave. Writes itself.
Good luck with that.
Right. So enough Hong Kongery, on to global geekery. And as previous pointed out, there is but one story. There is one story that will bind us all. And that begins with A and ends with Avengers.
That sounded like the Lord of the Rings you were describing, so I'm not really sure where you're going.
So, obviously, despite the fact that we get to see it a whole week ahead of the rest of... Well, not the rest. I mean, Hong Kong was amongst the first places that showed it, yes?
We were definitely before the U.S. by it.
Which is part of what made the continuity with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so peculiar.
Mm.
explique.
Well, it was timed to go with the episode, you know, their kind of crossover moment, which was the MCU crossover moment, which was, I think, a little bit of a filigree in the first place. But it was for you know, the episode that came out after the opening weekend in the US, rather than the episode that came out after the opening weekend here.
Right.
So it sort of, you know, at least it wasn't reverse.
Right.
It meant still, there was a bit more of a disconnect.
We got screwed.
I wouldn't say that.
Our continuity got messed with, man.
We had time to, you know, prepare to think about how might these events resonate through the one other hour in which they're going to resonate.
Given your time to reflect, what did you come up with?
I still don't understand, other than the aircraft carrier, what was supposed to be going.
I think that's pretty much everything right there.
Yeah, that's it. But the thing is, you would hope that there would actually be a bit more to that. You know, they had their... they've had their big reveal of the Inhumans.
Bum.
And this is... And this, I think, we'll bring it back to the Avengers this way, but...
Was there also such a crazy Kirby crackle around them?
Not enough Kirby. But...
It's very hard to see.
Marvel's pincer movement to try and reclaim the narratives that go with having mutants which they don't have access to.
Yes.
The Inhumans are the other prong. And unfortunately, using them that way, and I think there's some merit to it, but they're losing all of the Silver Age Kirby kind of wacko teleporting bulldog business that should go with it.
Yeah.
Killer hair. It's, you know, they're getting much more kind of...
I'm just waiting for DC to wake up and pull their thumb out of their ass and do that commandy live action movie.
They should embrace fully the ridiculousness of the Silver and the Bronze Age.
This is what they're doing on The Flash, and it is working
yes.
like gangbusters.
Yeah. That is why I truly enjoy that show.
Rod.
I mean, it's for everyone.
All right.
The whole family can watch it together.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also embracing the absurdity of the superhero universe.
And it's really working well. It's just really impressive. And this is the kind of thing that actually both the kind of Marvel controller kind of bit of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and also the very kind of angsty X-Men bit.
Right.
It's off in its own bubble.
So let's talk about that for a second, because...
They're not doing that.
They're embracing some of it, but they're still holding back. And granted, what's going on in The Flash would never have occurred had Marvel not pursued the level that they have.
Right. Right. Now...
Although this being said, the 1990 yeah. series of The Flash did involve The Flash actually vibrating through a wall at one point. Never hear about that.
No, yeah.
Much yet.
Oh,
they just did it, but... But they did take steps there. Unfortunately, the series was already canceled by the time that episode aired.
But the thing that struck me before we went on, Mike, was you've already brought up the Zulu-like warrior strategy of Marvel and sort of creating the horn.
Copyright.
The horns are closing.
Sun Tzu's art of copyright.
Well, no. So we've got the two things. As you say, we've got Marvel's continues to dig itself out of the hole that it created when it sold
leading up to
off
bankruptcy.
Right. So it sold off all of what it thought was the crown jewels in order to save itself, and now, you know, it's coming back with, but it still has to deal with the fact that it gave away the rights to mutants
But that went long before movies ever became a viable thing with them. For years, ever since the 60s, Marvel spent their time selling off various rights to characters
right.
to all sorts of different little companies in different media areas. That's why Spider-Man was such a coup when
they worked
with Sony to buy back all of these rights that were in places like Sesame Workshop and
right.
and I think Corman probably had some rights here and there, and he certainly had it for the Fantastic Four.
Right.
And that really would have been better.
Now, but I have seen it, and it was better than what was made by Universal.
So, but the thing that strikes me now is that we are now at a point where a massive retcon is going on. Not massive, but there's been a critical new step in Marvel's attempt to retcon the universe it still has control over relative to that which it no longer holds the filmic rights for.
In that they are trying to eliminate mutants from the mainstream of their universe.
And now that's infecting, is that too strong a word, the comic book universe?
Yes, it's infecting the comic book universe. They're in trying to create synergy among their entire company. They're essentially trying to reverse engineer the source material for all of these stories and characters. And in a way, it's a mistake, because the people who read the comics they're people that go to the movies, but they're
right.
not all of the people that go to the movies.
Right.
And generally, the people that go to the movies are not then going to go out and say, I think I'd like to sit in a chair and stare at unmoving pictures in my hands for a few minutes.
Or days.
It doesn't really translate back that much. I mean,
so why are they bothering them?
Because it comes down to wanting to secure their rights, their licensing rights, their character rights, so they don't have to share any more of the pie.
Well,
you're looking perturbed, quizzical.
I think that there's a real question about, especially as narratives that come out of the comic books become such dominant narratives in what is really a much wider popular culture. The question of who the audience for comic books, for actual comic books, is, which has been in a kind of since before the period of bankruptcy and near bankruptcy in the big titles. This has really been at issue. And it's been an issue in a way that comes up in terms of identity politics, it comes up in terms of distribution, the survival of local comic book stores or not, the advent of digital distribution. And we're talking about layers and layers and layers of confusion about a medium which, for good and ill, was once conceived of as kind of exclusively for 12-year-old boys.
Right.
And what all of this, all of this retconning is an attempt to kind of second guess who the audience is, which of course is generally now at least double that age and,
right.
and of many genders and what have you. But
at least two.
Yeah, but there's still this sort of strong impulse that people have to be able to enter this somehow afresh as 12-year-old boys.
But previous, I think you're making a different point, that it wasn't necessarily so much about the cultivation of the universe. It's strictly intellectual property rights.
Exactly, it's all IP. Now, Alice, you were making my point for me very well on another aspect of it, but the point I had started on was definitely, as you say, intellectual property rights. Because in the end, that was where their big falling down came. They had spread themselves so thin and had almost no profits from any of the uses of their characters outside of the comic world, which was what led to their bankruptcy and led to the restructuring of it once they were taken over after a bit of a fight between activist investors, and they found their footing.
Right.
And now being a part of Disney, they are embracing their role as essentially an R&D factory for the movies.
Stealing our dreams.
But in what they're doing within that is, you see a lot of the comics are now being told in a cinematic way, which, I'm sorry, does not actually work in the comic medium.
Right.
It shouldn't take you 4 minutes to read a 22-page comic. It really shouldn't.
But I think that if they understood their audience better, you know, in light of something which is actually a kind of an issue across the whole
These guys have armies of market researchers.
Market research is not actually what brings you the comic book audience.
They understand sales. They don't understand their audience. And their audience, yes, will buy a lot of these things, which are basically just event to event. They buy them because they're invested in the characters.
Right.
They live for the history of these characters.
Yes.
Even if they're latecomers to it, most people who come into comics and get into them start reading back. Start trying to read older things.
Which is also now much more facilitated than...
Yes. Now that old comics are all fairly readily available all over the internet. But what they're doing with their new crop of...
Not to mention, of course, those, you know, the valuable kind of, collections.
But the problem with what they're doing as an R&D factory is they're mining all the biggest stories that ever occurred in comics.
Right.
Using them in the movies and finding that, well, they have no other stories to tell, and they're going back and finding other stories that have already been told in the comics and retelling them, which is why they keep trying to reset everything without actually doing an entire DC-style new universe.
Yeah.
They're still reapproaching old storylines that worked at the time and trying to tell them in a longer form so that they can get more time.
There's a tremendous tropism in the movies, although we've seen some of them move away from this successfully, I think. But there's still a tremendous tropism towards origin stories. So the likelihood that you're going to get origin stories twice or origin stories four times rather than actually moving along continuity.
Right.
But it goes beyond the origin story because, as we've seen with Marvel, they incorporate little origins in each of their movies, but they do it very well. They don't focus too heavily on it anymore.
Well, actually, getting that proportion right is one of the ingredients.
One of the complaints about Daredevil was that it was a 12 or 13 episode origin.
Well, they're taking a different approach with that, and they're letting it play out as a story, which I'm fine. They're taking a very different tack with that entire series.
Right.
This is good. They don't get locked into one approach with all of their movie and TV, and that's good. That can only help them. It makes it richer, just like the comic universe was richer because you had different types of books out there.
And
not anymore, but you did.
In fact, what they're using the Daredevil series to do with the hybridity there is, you know, which they're doing both kind of in a they're both reaching towards kind of crime comics and also crime and street level comics, as well as
procedural
and crime drama.
Right.
So they're actually going towards genre in both media on Daredevil, and I have some more reservations maybe than previous about how that's working out, but I do think it's a reasonable tack.
Let's just compare two series that you've watched, or at least partially. You're enchanted by the Flash's embracing of the screwballery of Silver Age.
The fun of comics.
The fun. Okay. And also the kind of they actually reflect fairly well kind of the different kinds of arc structures in comics.
Right. But
actually the most comic booky of the shows.
But the new Daredevil series doesn't do it for you because...
Although I actually, you know, kind of, I've been thinking about it, like, and I realized I actually read a lot of Daredevil back in the day, more than I thought I did.
Same. I think that's the case with all of us.
In a pile of
Daredevil.
Frank Miller originals.
I never thought I'd read that much Daredevil or Thor, and I realized, yeah, I...
It took in a lot. It happened. But
you just don't realize it.
I took in a lot of Thor until so that empty. Billy Betamax or whatever the hell that was.
Beta Ray Bill?
Yeah, that just...
Beta Ray Bill!
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do that sort of... What is it, an antelope?
No, it's an alien worthy of the hammer of Thor.
I know, it just, I couldn't.
I'm sorry, that was the moment it got interesting.
Yeah, okay, you can fine. Leave now, Ross. We'll finish.
And also, if you can't deal with Beta Ray Bill, are you reading Invincible? Because
I have read Invincible.
I've
read the first.
It's kind of all, a lot of it.
No, fair enough. But okay, there's enough meta-ness in Invincible.
Invincible is great.
Yeah.
But
off topic! Now for our off topic segue. Let me recast the essential question here, or the question that we've been talking about.
There was a question.
Marvel, whether it's for. We all acknowledge that there's some sort of grand R&D project going on that unfortunately is now causing the rare earth of the Marvel universe to be reconstructed and they're splitting the atoms.
Talking about the Inhumans versus mutants.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, sort of the fact that they felt it necessary to go back and strip out the mutantness of the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver because they went bankrupt, boohoo, a couple decades and so sold all their mutants, and now
the terrible. The ghastly thing that was done in the Marvel Universe where the Scarlet Witch was the linchpin of the destruction of everything, which was like the least motivated thing ever.
But
that wasn't so cynically motivated by intellectual property rights.
I'm hoping that if there is a good motive for demutanting the Scarlet Witch.
Unfortunately, that's not.
It's a cynical motive. Even if it's a cynical motive, if there's one thing that it could do. If it could kind of retcon out some of that, because that sucked.
Okay.
And the idea that the Scarlet Witch, who hitherto had mostly caused sparkly stuff to appear,
Every writer.
Mutants in general, at a certain stage, lots of mutants had pretty indistinct or.
Well, most of them had energy blasts. But that's different from.
There was a guy who knew a lot of languages in the New Mutants.
That was awesome.
Cypher was a great character. They killed him off, they brought him back finally. Because they realized every single character doesn't have to.
That's when I started writing New Mutants. And then I started writing my Beta Ray, Billy, and Cypher slash fiction. You want to see
You're
it?
Disturbed. I do want to see it.
These two directions.
You're kind of getting to the bigger philosophical question. I'm brass tacking it. Is there anything more than just cold hard IPR management in this current retcon?
At its core, no.
Okay.
But good can come out of it. I mean, you do have creators trying to do something. As I said, though, unfortunately, a lot of them are just trying to rehash. The past, especially things that sort of work but didn't work to the extent that they can work nowadays, such as Secret Wars.
Is that the original title? Secret Wars.
Yeah.
So, 5 years out, what does the Marvel Universe look like as a result of demutanizing?
It looks the same.
Okay.
It's not going to change anything because they've just replaced one arbitrary means of giving powers to people with another arbitrary means of giving powers to people. And that's what it's all about, just finding an easy way to create more superheroes without actually coming up with a clever origin.
Well, I'm, you know, I will be, I don't think that they're actually, you know, I don't think they can actually, I'm not too worried about whether they can actually kind of purge this, but, you know, the history of the mutants as a, you know, as a kind of arc, as a shifting source of symbolism in the Marvel Universe is, you know, rich and diverse and interesting.
Yeah.
And I would hate to see that cast off in favor of, you know, frankly, being hit by the Terrigen Mist is not as flexible as I was born with this and or when I was a teenager, everything was suddenly out of control and I had to find a new identity, which
right.
is your
granted,
standard mutant thing. And
mutants won't go away. I mean, they're still going to be a part of the Marvel Universe in some way, shape, or form. They're not going to let go of it, but they're not going to, for the time being, invest in them as heavily just because they're not seeing as many outside profits from it.
Is there any point, you know far more about this than us, is there going to be any point in the future where conceivably the X-Men, it all comes back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
I think eventually it will.
Spider-Man is coming, so...
Yeah, eventually it will.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe
even if it means sharing a little bit of profit over in that direction.
I think there's probably more money in this for everybody than in kidnapping local heiresses.
But there's not as much negotiation.
But you don't have to spend as much time in a cage.
Right. There's very little R&D involved, and... Clearly, they're not even thinking of cool supervillain names anymore.
And, you know, when they did kidnap her, they first robbed her house. So it's almost as though she was an afterthought. There's a girl here. Let's grab her, too.
Was it opportunistic? Did they figure that out?
It feels a little opportunistic.
All right.
But when you're in the moment, you just go with it. You know, what does my character say? Take the girl.
I've got this cave. Let's go.
They call me Lack of Premeditation Boy.
There we go. That would have been a super cool kidnapper / bandit name.
Missing my métier once again.
moving on to semi-excellent segue into the CCC, Chinese Cinema Corner.
Because we've all been asking for it.
Yeah. Come on, man. It's a Hong Kong podcast. Play along. So reaching back into the dusty piles of DVDs I had back at the Batcave, I took another look at Let the Bullets Fly.
Which is a musical, right?
Right. Actually, it felt at parts that it could have used a few musical numbers. So, quick setup. It's a 2010 action dramedy, black comedy.
Yeah, an action comedy.
An action comedy with heavy sort of Sergio Leone Western.
Period piece.
It's a period piece. Starring and directed by Jiang Wen, who was the dude from Zhang Yimou's Red Sorghum. He's sort of this gravelly voiced Clint Eastwood-y type Chinese man's man actor. And this is his sort of self-promotion vehicle to allow him to be his Clint Eastwood. And this whole thing is...
Bringing the East to Eastwood.
Yes. With the East back in Eastwood. Jiang Wen is...
Eastwood is red.
But a bump. This is not rare for these big budget things. It is largely a mainland China production. And I'm sure there was Hong Kong cinematography and money thrown in it, but it was done in Mandarin with a fair bit of Sichuanese in it, which I don't know how they got that past the censors. Jiang Wen sort of stars as, you know, the man with no name, except his name, in fact, is Pockmark Huang. There we go, and he's a bandit. Wouldn't you know it? He's a bandit
with a name like that.
The good old days are back for you.
And he's an attorney.
Doesn't seem too good, neither. he's a bandit, sort of one of these kind of proto communist revolutionary type bandits. He's not a full on communist, but you can tell he's really a bandit because.
Well, it does take place in 1921, so he probably matured into communism.
Right. And I think that's probably why this subject matter was allowed to kind of get the big budget treatment in China. He plays a leader of a bandit brigade that...
A band
of detos who rob a train, find out that the train is actually the incumbent mayor of a small town in Sichuan province.
The incoming, yes.
Who tries to, in order to avoid letting the bullets fly, he convinces Pockmark to take his place, or rather sort of pretends that he actually killed the incoming mayor and that the bandit should pose as the mayor, and
it's a lot of plot,
but you know what, in 1920 Sichuan, if you're gonna make it big, you
should...
There
was no television, so they had to plot.
They had to take over the town. So it's one of these One Last Score meets Sergio Leone kind of wandering through pretty dusty western-y thing, and there's surging kind of type music all over the place.
On the peepaw.
Nary a peepaw in sight.
So the air hole?
so you've got this sort of bandit with a heart of gold, pretending to be a mayor, who's squaring off against a gangster lord who is played by, wait for it, Chow Yun Fat.
Well, who else?
Wave your hands in the air.
And wave them like you do.
Someone
care.
The audience might have heard of.
Right. Oh, come on. I'm sure one or two people who have heard of dude from Red Sorghum.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's the one guy the audience would have heard
and
of.
And he plays a lovable, crazy, foppish
Our
crime
audience.
Lord. I mean, he's...
That's the closest we have to anybody listening.
I think he's emailed us once.
Right. Or twice. So, we have, and I'm not sure what would the intent... I mean, the obvious intention was to be somewhat homastic, if that isn't a word.
Homagique
to spaghetti westerns. And, indeed, it was essentially one sort of slice of China's Wild West. You have... kind of gravelly voiced, truer than true bandits who, you know, don't necessarily wear ponchos, but wear fetching, you know, sort of one piece outfits of, you know, Shanghai Tang probably designed. But yet, for all this sort of hard boiled Chinese Western dry boned black comedy, it still has those really insane moments. Like, you know, someone doesn't just get kicked. They have to be kicked into a massive drum. And of course, they bound off the drum and come back to the kicker, who kicks them again. And there's this 5-minute montage of people getting kicked into musical instruments, and hilarity ensues. It's this... If you like genre mashups, if you like your Chinese kung fu flicks sort of spliced with
cartoons
and kind
and
of
if you like Shannon, smash 1984 hit, let the music play.
Then this is your movie. I mean, Chai Yun Fat is far from phoning it in. In fact, quite the opposite. He's doing his kind of completely over the top, I am the bad guy and spectacularly dressed in so being. And
resplendent.
Yeah, he is super resplendent. Lots of great hats. In fact, the best part of the movie is the fact that they pull off the kind of Mandarin collar with straw boater look like you wouldn't believe.
This is why the Chinese cinema is so interested in the period of nationalism. Is
straw boaters?
Yeah, you can't keep that whole kind of moment of
they had a look.
They had a look. They started toying with Western sensibilities, and it's
a historical period.
It is a historical period. I mean, if you like historical Chinese drama, it is worth it just for that. If you do like Chinese historical drama, you probably would be able to sort of just grit your teeth through the you know, buffoons bouncing off big drum portion of it. It's surprisingly bloody for a mainland film. You wouldn't see the amount of beheadings you normally... I mean, you see it in Hong Kong kind of Category 3 films, but this was kind of the first real kind of balls out bloodfest.
Kidnappers mainland. That are being beheaded? Because... it would be justified then.
Yeah. Actually, you know, it's a good point. No, just general banditry. At one point,
question of just desserts.
Right. And, you know, the bullets don't fly as much as you think they do. There's more.
What is the title?
The actual translation is not, I'll have to throw it in the comment sections later, but it is not Let the Bullets Fly. It's probably...
It's Let the Music Play. But they thought that
with Pockmark.
Right. Well, there's a very Tarantino-esque bit in the middle where the two... You know, the bandit with the heart of gold and the gangster with the
bullets of lead.
With the bullets of lead and the excellent silk cravat are kind of doing that sort of classic Chinese drinking scene where everyone's drinking very small glasses of baijiu, of just rot gut rice wine, but constantly, and they're sort of, you know, hate toasting each other
until somebody kicks over the table and yells, "Your school is crap. Watch my sentence."
I said no spoilers. Now, okay, go back and fast forward to that last bit, because Alice has ruined the magic of Let the Bullets Fly. Anyways, if you are a fan of competitive rice wine chugging, there's a good chunk of the middle film that'll just tickle you. I don't know. I'd give it a C.
How many decapitated heads? Five.
Okay. 3.5 out of 5. I mean, it is. It's
generous.
It's worthy. It's worthy. And like I said, you know, it could, if Chinese cinema just could get over itself and just avoid the comic kind of extravagances of the violent scenes, it would have been a much finer, kind of leaner and very kind of spaghetti western-y film, which it clearly was going for, but then, you know, some fool had to bounce off a drum.
Well, I watched the trailer this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It intrigued me enough that I really want to see it.
Yeah.
And then you had to go and describe it, and now I've kind of lost all my desire.
No.
Okay. I think we're re-recording now. Right. Weird. Right. We're gonna...
Having no idea where we were.
Having no idea where we were. We're moving forward. We had some technical difficulties in the bat base, but we are going on to the penultimate portion of our show, Personal Picadillos, what we've all been consuming. Previous night.
Well, lately, other than the standard big audience crap that everybody consumes, I recently discovered a fairly small film from 2013.
Yeah.
Called Coherence. It's a tiny little thing about eight adult friends having a dinner party during the night of a comet passing over mm-hmm. the Earth. And
As you do.
They didn't do it for the comet or anything. It just happens to be that night. And through the course of the film, you discover that this comet has brought a strange situation upon them. Which, if I go into any detail, will be completely spoilery, so prepare to be completely spoiled. Ends up, it kind of opened a doorway into alternate realities, like a roulette wheel of a multiverse. And every time someone goes outside to investigate various things or try to get to another house, which ends up being this very same house, but from some other universe, they come back to a place that is not where they left, but all the same people with slightly different things about them. Just slightly, and you don't even realize until you're a good halfway through the film that you start to realize, oh, wait a minute, some of these people might not be the same that we started with. And it's a very fascinating little thing about how their relationships develop throughout the course of this, being different people. And how you approach a world where you realize very soon this will probably end and you have to pick where you're going to be and what kind of world you want to be in. In the end, we really only follow one person that we know is the one we were with at the beginning.
Any recognizable talent? Or is it very?
They're all vaguely recognizable. I think the one person that stands out is Nicholas Brendon. Xander from
Buffy. Nice
that
he's getting work.
Yeah. It's hard when you have a lisp. You're an actor. No, that's an actual problem. Boss.
Right. You know, yeah.
Kind of respectful.
Right.
Yeah, but it drew me in, and it played it very, very slow and subtle without a lot of, are we recording?
You know what? Let's
we were recording.
Let's take a technical break. We'll be right back.
Right back.